Self-esteem is a word that is embedded in the United States culture. But could it have a downside when it comes to faith? Stay tuned and find out.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Welcome back. We are in the second part of a series on why young people are walking away from the Christian faith and what we can learn from this and what we can do about it. And while I talk a lot to parents, this is not information that's just for parents or people like grandparents who are acting as parents. This is information for educators, for youth pastors, for mentors. Really, it's for anybody who cares about the upcoming generations. Now, like I said last time, a lot of the data that I'm going to give you can be discouraging. But the point of this series is not to get you into a state of depression and discouragement. It is because we can only tackle problems when we know what they are and when we face the reality of those. Sticking our head in the sand is not going to change anything. It's just going to get things worse. So what we have been talking about is I've broken down the data, the research that shows why kids that are raised in church, these aren't kids who just occasionally attend. These are kids who are raised in church. They are raised often, most of the time in Christian homes. They know the faith. They even come to a profession of faith in their childhood or in their youth, and then they're walking away. And as I explained in the last episode, you definitely want to make sure that you listen to that if you haven't. It's not always a hard rejection in the sense of, I don't want anything to do with you or your God. Sometimes it's a softer kind of rejection, and it's the, you know, you do you kind of thing. Hey, you've got your faith. Glad, good for you. You know, that's great. I've got mine. It's just, you know, you do you and I'll do me. And that's going to lead us into, as we're talking about the impact of culture on the faith. And I talked earlier about self-esteem. Now, here's the thing that I want you to understand from the beginning. Our identity, our sense of self, is one of the most crucial characteristics that we need to develop in our lives. Having a sense of our own agency and empowerment is incredibly helpful. But as a believer, there is a difference. There is a night and day, life and death difference between a true sense of self, where I recognize and I deal with the tension of two things that are true. They don't contradict each other, but they do create a tension. On one hand, I am made in God's image. And as a person, not even as a Christian, as a person, that by itself gives me a dignity and a value that nothing can take away. At the same time, because we live in a world where we have an inborn sinful nature that does not draw us to God, it draws us to look out for ourselves, and we live in a broken world, then I also have a need for God so that what? So that I can become more like my original design. This is not a great analogy. I'm just going to admit that up front. But it's like if I bought a car and then it was in a wreck and it got all banged up and then I take it into a shop, I want them to restore that car to its original design. Again, not the greatest analogy in the world, but you get the point. And that's what this life as a Christian is. It is us being recreated, transformed, made new so that we become more and more like the original design that we have. But culture tells us that self-esteem is I just feel good about myself, period. End of sentence. There's no dependency there. There's no dependent phrases that get included with that. There's no tension between, yes, I want to be happy with myself. I want to be content with myself. But on what basis? Well, Christianity has an answer for that. Now, there's a tension to be navigated there. What's missing in our culture is that we don't have a tension. It's just a matter of you just feel good about yourself no matter who you are, no matter what you do. As long as you feel good about it in the moment, that's good for you. And we have really devalued what true self-esteem is and how it comes to us and how we develop that over these last decades as we have focused so much on kids and their self-esteem. And we just need to tell them they're awesome. We just need to tell them they're wonderful. We just need to make them feel good enough about themselves. And that does not last over the long haul. It just doesn't. Because there is something within us that knows we need more than just to feel good. We need to be good. And when we are really honest with ourselves, we recognize there is a war within us that sometimes we don't always want to be what we know we should be. And Christianity, again, recognizes that tension, accounts for why we have it, and gives it a way to deal with it. The watered-down version of self-esteem that our culture has been selling us and continues to sell us for a very long time doesn't do that. It doesn't create attention, and it doesn't account for why we have it, and it certainly doesn't give us an answer for it. So the way that this is showing up and how it is impacting why young people are walking away from the faith is because they have placed a higher value on acceptance, affirmation, and self-esteem as these are the highest human values. It's not about honor. It's not integrity. It's not doing right. It's not about how I show up in the world. It's about how I feel about myself. And it fosters a very me-centric world rather than I'm part of a bigger world. It's like, no, I'm my own little world. And what matters most is that I feel good about myself, not how I'm showing up, not what good am I bringing into the world. And because of that, again, going back to Gen Z data here, and as a reminder, those are people who were born between about 2000 and 2015. And the Gen Z group is projected to make up about a third of the world's population. So this is going to have a profound impact in the years and decades to come. But of this Gen Z group, significant studies that show about 58% believe that many religions can lead to eternal life. It's not just Christianity. There's all different kinds of faiths and beliefs that will get you to a good place in eternal life. 33% of Gen Z believe that gender is based on how a person feels, not their birth sex. That will continue to have huge ramifications in how people show up, and the laws and the policies and just the attitudes and the practices of what we engage with on an individual level, as well as what we engage with on a societal level. And it might seem like, well, what's the connection between this belief about many religions that can lead to eternal life and gender being based on how a person feels and not their birth sex? Well, the underlying tenet there is that it's what I feel, it's what I think that matters most. It's not about any universal truth that stands outside of me that I might need to come into alignment with. It's that I possess truth inside of me and I bring it into the world, not that there's something that stands outside apart from me. And again, it becomes a very me-centric way of showing up in the world. And a lot of times, you know, we've gotten so used to this that we don't even recognize the full extent of how me-centric so much of this thinking is, rather than understanding I am not the world, I am a part of the world, but there are truths that exist outside of me. It's not like, oh, well, once I showed up in the world, all of a sudden I brought this new truth into the world. It's like, no, these truths have existed since the beginning, and I either choose to align with them or not, but I don't show up with them. Another reason that culture is impacting why young people are walking away from the faith is because we've had for a very long time now in our culture an esteeming of youth and a devaluing of age. Now, this is something that is not universal around the world. There are still other cultures that look at this and think, y'all are nuts. Y'all are just idiots for how you approach this. There are other cultures that recognize that youth has a lot of energy. It has a lot of passion. It has a lot of ability, but it has not fully developed all the wisdom of what to do with that. And that is where age is prioritized and looked at in order to be able to have the wisdom, to share the wisdom, to know, what do I do with all this energy? What do I do with all of this passion? But in the United States and in much of the West, that has been totally reversed for quite some time now. And it's not just something that has happened out in the world. It's also something that has become just very commonplace in our churches as well. I don't know how many times that I have heard, you know, about the emphasis on, well, you know, the youth today are the church of tomorrow. Well, yes, that's true. But what about the church of today? So there is a difference between investing in our youth and teaching them and guiding them and creating tremendous opportunities for them to learn about their abilities and to grow. Absolutely, we need to do that. But there is a difference between that and saying, hey, we're going to only invest in our youth. And basically, we're going to act like that because you have this passion and you have this capacity, that somehow you automatically have the wisdom and the knowledge that you need to handle that well. That's just nuts. So what we need to do is, it's not about looking at a kind of like if we were looking at a scale or we were looking at a teeter. We don't have to bring one age down in order to bring another one up. I'm not advocating here that we bring youth and young people down, not at all. What I am saying is that we need to have equality. We need to recognize where there are benefits, there are capacities, there are strengths that different age categories have. And absolutely, youth have the benefit of having so much more energy oftentimes than older individuals do. But how many older individuals that have traded the energy for the wisdom, for the knowledge, for the experience? So what we need to do is to work more at bringing these ages together and to recognizing that capacity by itself does not somehow automatically show up with the necessary knowledge and wisdom in order to manage that capacity well. Far too often, what we really have is we have the blind kind of leading the blind. And that is not putting youth down. It's just acknowledging the reality of life, that there are some things you don't learn until you've lived it. Yeah, it's like, have you ever run into this people who they could tell you all about how to parent, and then they had kids, and maybe even it wasn't until maybe they had a couple that all of a sudden they realized that everything that they thought they knew about parenting was wrong. Well, why is that? Because there are some things you just don't even have the ability to learn until you actually walk down those paths. And so it's not that youth are dumb or stupid or we just want to throw them under the bus. We just need to recognize that there are some things that they haven't even had the opportunity to learn yet. So we still need to be providing the guidance for them. But when we continue to send the messages to youth that you've got it, you're good, you go run, you don't really need adults speaking into your lives, well then, what do we expect them to do? Another reason, another impact that culture has on why kids are walking away from the faith is because we have been propagating this idea for a long time that the individual is more important than the community. In other words, the height of maturity is independence. And that just simply isn't. The height of maturity is owning our interdependence. You see, independence doesn't require me to take ownership of the fact that I impact other people. It also doesn't require me to take ownership of the fact that other people impact me, and that this both of these things need to impact how I am going to show up in the world. Independence, again, it fosters a very me-centric world. If the height of maturity is independence, you just go out, you take care of you, you look after you, then we are shortchanging our youth. And this is the message that we have been sending for a long time. We talk about independence. Well, when you get to be independent, when you get to be this age and you can do X, Y, Z on your own, well, then that's it. You know, that's what maturity is. No, it's not. What we've been advocating, though, as a culture for a long time is that the individual is more important than the community. And that is simply not the case. Now, is it a matter that the community is more important than the individual? No. Again, there's a tension that is created here that we always have to navigate. That's part of a life of maturity. You know, anytime that you hear something that sounds like it's true, but when you really examine it, if there's no corresponding truth, not contradiction, but corresponding truth that creates a tension, that's a red flag. Because truths stand in kind of like two sides. Think of like a tightrope, and you've got one side of the rope that's anchored in one side, and then you have the rope anchored in the other side. And it is the tension that allows that rope to stand so that somebody can walk across it. You have the same thing with a bridge. Every bridge is constructed using the principles of tension. It is tension, whether it is a steel, it's concrete, it's rope, it's whatever. From the ancient Roman arches to the modern suspension bridges, it's always based on these principles of tension. Too little, and you will have a bridge that just won't stand. Too much, and you have a bridge that will break. But you cannot create a bridge without tension. And in the same way, the mature life, the Christian life, calls us to wrestle with things that create a tension, not because they contradict, but because they create bridges. They create a way for us to move forward from immaturity to maturity. One of the things that we can do with our kids is we can stop emphasizing independence so much, and we can get them to see that true maturity is one step higher, and that is owning our interdependence. Now, there might be some of you listening right now, and you're like, you know, you're kind of dealing with that very real scenario of you've got a kid who's, you know, maybe graduated from high school and is home, and you're just like, look, at this point, I just want to get them to the place of independence. Okay. I get that. I understand that. Raise five sons. I know how that goes. But again, we don't want to say, but then you will have arrived. It is when we go one step beyond that, that we are walking as people of maturity. But what happens, and what this has to do with the Christian faith, is when we say to kids, well, you're more important, again, than how you affect the community, then what, again, we're focusing on, we're reinforcing this very me-centric way of showing up in the world, which says, hey, you just do you. And we can say that when it comes to anything from gender to education to manners to dress to hygiene. Why are we surprised when it shows up when it comes to our faith? Okay, one other thing about culture I'm going to touch on today, and that is that so many young people think that science and Christianity are incompatible. Get this. For Gen Z, significant studies that show only 28%, only 28%, that's just a little bit more than one out of every four kids born between 2000 and 2015 believe that science and Christianity are complementary. That is a sad, sobering statistic. That means three out of four believe that science and church teachings are not complementary, that you can't really hold to science and Christianity. That is startling. Now, that doesn't mean that three of those four walk away from the faith, but they still can hold that belief, even if they remain a Christian, that, okay, yeah, but science and Christianity really are incompatible. You can't really be a scientist and be a Christian. And as someone said in one of these books, you know, we lose Christians to science and we lose scientists to Christianity. How many kids who are gifted with abilities in all areas of science are avoiding those fields because they have this mistaken idea that Christianity and science are not compatible? And here's the thing on this, okay? It's going to take more than just trying to school our kids about the age of the earth and about dinosaurs and the Great Flood in order to change this. Because science is about a whole lot more than the age of the earth. Science also has to do with medical ethics. It has to do with AI and AI ethics. It has to do with the planet. It has to do with how we care for people psychologically. It has to care for not just what we think of in terms of things related to evolution. It's a whole lot bigger than that. And how sad that we are losing Christian kids to science, and how sad, and what are we missing out on because we are losing good scientists because they're not going into those fields because they choose to hold on to their faith and they have this idea that science and Christianity are incompatible. Well, we are going to talk about some things that we can do with all of this information as we walk through this series. So again, stay tuned, keep listening to the series. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast and hey, share this with some friends, with some other people in your community, in your area. Because again, when you have shared knowledge and you have shared language, you have the opportunity to exponentially increase the impact that you have in your area on your young people. And if you haven't already, hop on over to the website, stephaniepresents.com, sign up for my weekly newsletter, High Impact, and reach out about bringing me to speak to your in your area. It might be a church, it might be a Christian school, a homeschool organization, or maybe, you know what, you get more than one group together and you have an area-wide conference for parents, and I also do for women's events, because the more knowledgeable that we are and the more unified that we are with knowledge and with tools to be able to implement, again, the greater our impact. And why does this matter? Well, again, because this is absolutely true. You have an impact that is immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable. See you next time.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.